listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Outta Vegas. With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
You heard it. I'm RJ live, coast to coast. 200 Fox Sports Radio stations. It's 6 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock here in Vegas. Action-packed Thursday for you. Yeah, we recap Toronto losing to Milwaukee. We look ahead, Golden State and Portland. Also, what's going on with the Jets? Dysfunction? What's going on with the Knicks? How's everyone doing? Anyone on suicide watch? Some may be, from the way it sounds. Joined in studio, Brad Powers, Steve Fezzik. Both of them way too egocentric to ever commit suicide. Wouldn't you say, Fez?
Correct.
I mean, when you're a narcissist, you don't commit suicide.
Well, there's so many fun things you could do if it ever came down to that, that would be higher on my list.
See, there you go. I mean, we knew you'd have an answer. Sports bettors listen for the money. Sports fans listen to know more than their buddies. My personal promise, we will deliver the Vegas truth to you. You can't have pros, though, without Joes. He's in L.A. He's Jonas Knox.
Always good to be here, RJ. And we're going to start in the NBA playoffs. Last night in Milwaukee, it was the Bucks, the one seed overall in the NBA, taking a 1-0 series lead over the Toronto Raptors. 108-100 was the final.
Yeah, this was an interesting one. We actually were recording our podcast while the game was going on. Fezzik usually pays a lot of attention during a pod because, let's be honest, he struggles even if he pays attention sometimes. So he's looking at my mouth trying to figure out. Instead, I saw him glance and saw him glance. And you had a bet on Milwaukee.
I did. And I've got a bet on Milwaukee for the series against you, RJ.
That's true. Now, moving on quickly, is we don't want to belabor that point. Now I'm down 0-1. But it strikes me that it's hard to say that the Milwaukee bettors, the many thousands that followed you, feels like they were pretty lucky. So do we come away saying, hey, Toronto lost the game, and hey, you got to win four. So when you lose one, it matters no matter how lucky or unlucky you've been. But maybe Toronto's better than we think because they were leading with 3.5 minutes left. The Raptors were leading with 3.5 minutes left, and they were up by 7 entering the fourth. You would think now, you say, wow, fatigue is the issue, not so much at Milwaukee, so much better. And oh, by the way, you might say fatigue, quantify that. They had 2 days off. Here's a stat. When you have a rested home team, so that was Milwaukee in the playoffs, with 4 more days rest, that's how we define rest, and the opponent, the road team, is off a game 7 victory, obviously, because they advance. Last 17 times, straight up, that team's won 3 times. The road team, the tire team, Toronto. And against the spread, only 4 of 13. So I get not winning the game because they're on the road. But the idea you only cover 4 and lose 13 out of those 17 games. So think about that. 4 winners, 13 losers against the spread when Toronto was in the spot they were. Now they lost against the spread, but boy, oh boy, if you were to bet this game at 44 minutes, Toronto wins. If I'm a Toronto fan, do I come away thinking, huh, if I wasn't in such a bad situational spot, Toronto wins the game on the road?
Yes, Toronto basically greatly exceeded expectations. Not just
even though they don't cover.
Even though they don't cover, it's not just the end of the third quarter.
Now, are you going to cash your ticket?
Oh, of course.
I mean, you could cash it and donate it to charity.
I stole someone else's money. I'll take it, RJ. Toronto dominated the whole game. They had the lead. Think about it. They're plus 6.5, and they are leading by double digits for most of the first half, and even at the end of the third quarter, comfortably up 7. Yeah, maybe they don't hold on to the win, but to not cover. 10-0 run at the end of the game. Milwaukee backers, including myself.
Okay, so here's the question. It sounds like you just repeated what I said. I'm not asking you if Toronto led with 3.5 minutes left. I'm not asking you if they were double-digit leaders in the first half. I'm asking you, the guy who creates the power ratings, do you upgrade Toronto?
I'm not going to upgrade Toronto.
So that's why. So you're saying you haven't reevaluated how good Toronto is?
I have not, because I feel that Toronto was fortunate in this game and in the first half because Milwaukee did not make their 3-point shots. Milwaukee only hit 25% of their threes during the game, 11 for 44, and they had wide open looks all game long.
Okay, so whenever there's a bad shooting night, there's two possibilities, and it's not A or B, it's a spectrum. On one far end is, hey, the defense was so good they couldn't be expected to make those shots. On the other end, ton of open looks, just missed them. So your eye test and some stats say Toronto had a lot of open looks, and in a normal given situation, they wouldn't have been as unlucky as they were, and they would have made significantly more threes. This is Milwaukee, and thus they should have won this game more easily.
Correct.
Okay, so you kind of weigh the two and say that you haven't reevaluated any team. On one hand, there's a pro-Toronto argument because they were tired. On the other hand, there's a pro-Milwaukee argument because they missed a lot of open shots. In the end, it's a wash.
Exactly right. Did not change my ratings.
Brad Powers, any thoughts, eye test from you?
I would slightly upgrade Toronto because we had a couple question marks coming with Toronto into the game. In the last series, at least the last couple of games, it looked like it was Kawhi Leonard and everybody else. I thought it was a major positive that a guy like Kyle Lowry, a person that struggles in the playoffs, goes and put 30 points. I got to think moving forward, he's playing with a little bit more confidence. I would add a slight upgrade on Toronto.
So Lowry, 10 of 15, 7 of 9 from 3, 7 makes 2 misses from 3. His off-shooting hand injured. There was questions coming in. Didn't bother him. But I tell you, here's the question. And I got Toronto in our little bet. So I'm not feeling good. I personally am probably downgrading Toronto a little bit. And here's why. It's not so much from this game. It's what I've seen this entire playoffs. Remember, Toronto lost that first game against, was it Brooklyn, if I'm remembering right, or Orlando?
Yep, they lost to Brooklyn, and also lost to the 76ers, I believe, early on. They split the series and didn't.
So, but that first game in that first round when you're the number 2 seed and you lose, it's like, what's going on? And we looked at the stats, looked at the box score, and Kawhi played like 32 minutes.
Right.
It was his, and then the next game, Kawhi went into playoff mode, and they obviously advanced the next round. What is different about this Toronto team? And here's the key question. What is different about this team than the team that disappointed last year as much as any playoff team relative to the regular season? Fez was going around with his abacus. He was saying, the point differential is amazing for the Raptors. That's a pretty good imitation, yep. I think. True or not? There's so much value.
Kawhi Leonard is a...
No, I'm sorry. Are you avoiding the question?
Nothing has changed with these other players in Toronto. They are all underachieving, not ready
you
for prime time.
You notice he still hasn't answered the question?
Yeah. Ask me again.
Well, were you checking a score?
No.
You loved the Raptors last year. You loved them the year before, saying they're so much better than they're getting credit for, right?
Yes.
And in the playoffs, they just, you know, as Colin says, the baby dinosaurs.
Right.
Kawhi's different. Kawhi has a ring. Kawhi can take a game over. In fact, he can take a game over to such a degree that people will say he looks like Jordan. Or some people will say he might be the best player in the NBA. Like, literally, we heard that. But I don't think... Who's number 2? we're saying Lowry was today, but if you look at the playoff history of the players on the Raptors, other than Kawhi, is there anyone that you can say that person has such a strong playoff history that even if Kawhi has an off night, I could expect that person to step up? Listen, anyone can step up, right? I mean, Lowry can have a good game. What's he making a year, Lowry? Like $30 million or something? You're supposed to be able to have a good game. But if I say, would you want to make a bet that Lowry's going to have a really good playoffs?
No, Lowry historically has been terrible in the playoffs.
So who would you bet on Toronto? Which player?
Siakam.
Siakam? Really?
That's a condemning statement that I got to choose him to be the guy.
Make the case for Siakam.
Well, he's a 20-point per game guy. So
okay, but we're not talking about regular season. I'm asking about how's the playoffs.
He's disappearing in the playoffs.
So they don't have anybody.
So hold on. So did you hear my question?
Yeah, I don't trust any of them, RJ.
So why'd you say Siakam?
Well, just because I got
to
choose somebody.
Just to say a name randomly?
I got to choose somebody.
No. What I'm saying is, let's just, guys, if you're listening, just act like the last 90 seconds didn't happen, okay? We're going to start over. All right. Steve Fezzik, we're straight out of Vegas. I'm RJ Bell. Toronto, Kawhi Leonard. I think we can trust Kawhi. He's got a ring. He goes into alpha mode. Is there anyone else on Toronto that you would be willing to make a bet? And one of these options is no. There's no one.
There is no one. I don't trust any of the other players, RJ.
Okay, so maybe that's the ultimate point here, is you got a team that with Kawhi, Kawhi's going to play well most of the time, okay? He's a great player. But which NBA team makes the finals? This is to make the finals when they only have one guy that's reliable in the playoffs.
It doesn't happen very often.
I mean, maybe we can say LeBron with some of those Cavs teams.
Yeah, Iverson with the Sixers, but that's about it.
And you've got to be, again, it's got to be a weak conference, and this Milwaukee team is anything but weak. And speaking about Milwaukee, you made a really good point about the 25% from three. Obviously, you'd expect that to be better. Last point I want to get into, you know, you look at Gasol, you look at Ibaka for Toronto. They were really good fits against Philadelphia because Embiid. Philadelphia doesn't play a super modern game. Modern being a bunch of three-pointers, the movement that you see with Golden State. So I actually dug in and said, okay, well, how did Milwaukee do in the regular season against Toronto? Saying, okay, you know, they played four games. The ATS margin was Milwaukee by 28 combined points. So it was 3-1 against the spread for Milwaukee. But they outscored Toronto by 28 points versus what the spread was. So expectation would be zero. They're plus 28. Over four games, that's mighty impressive, right? That's 7 points a game they're winning by. Now, the question becomes, well, what about the other more modern teams? So we ended up getting a list. And this is a list of the team. And this might not be the best way to define modern, but this is against the teams that attempt the most threes in a game, which is probably a pretty good shortcut. So that's Houston, Milwaukee, Atlanta, Dallas, Brooklyn, Detroit, Boston, and Golden State. Against those teams, straight up, Toronto was 13-12. Against every other team, they were 53-17. All right, this is something you're not hearing anywhere else. In fact, we're going to have the breaking news. Think about this. This isn't some, oh, let's randomly. We're saying the teams that shoot a bunch of threes, that's the modern style of basketball. And we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The 8 teams that shoot the most threes. Against them, Toronto is break even, 13-12 this season. Against everyone else, 53-17. Now, if you look against the spread, against the modern teams, 7-18. Against every other team, 37-32. So above 500 against the slow prodding teams, against the modern teams, Toronto struggles. This is new. I haven't heard this. And to me, it's mighty important. I just think it's a matchup problem for Milwaukee, or matchup advantage for Milwaukee, problem for Toronto. And though it didn't look like it in this game, I think this might be Toronto. Not that Toronto's not going to win a game. I think it was a little bit deceiving. Bucks, by the way, 9-1 now against the spread in the postseason. So if you just said, boy, I like that Giannis, and you bet him every game, you'd be 90%. When we come back, we've got one last interesting stat on Milwaukee and also a bunch of other stuff.
That's coming up next. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox, and this is the pregame show you always wanted right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm RJ Bell. We are Straight Out of Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan. Coming up here in just a couple of moments, we will have some final thoughts on the Bucks and the Raptors from last night.
Jonas, did you know Outa is spelled O-U-T-T-A?
Is it? I would have gone G-H-T.
It's just fair. I know that you're not as hip as some may think. You put on that hipster guise, but we all know the truth.
I usually just go S-O-V. It's a little more gangster to it.
Each weekday, we have fun bringing the fun of Vegas straight to you. Right now on the Strip, 79 degrees. The neon is coursing. We talked about it, Brad. We had one last thing on this Milwaukee-Toronto first game. It bears repeating, though, that conclusion at the end of the last segment. The idea that Toronto just does exceptionally well against non-modern teams, old-school teams. 53-17 straight up. That's like borderline all-time kind of record, 53-17. And against the eight most common or frequent three-point shooting teams, 13-12. And oh, by the way, Milwaukee is on that list. Problematic. I also think another big advantage from Milwaukee is going to be the return, because it's been two games, of their point guard, Brogdon. 27 minutes, 15 points. Okay, that's good. But he is a facilitator, like most point guards, a facilitator. Now, there's a plus minus, which means when you're on the floor, how does your team do? Now, over any given game, it can be fluky, but over an extended period, it's not. Best plus minus of any player in the game yesterday was Brogdon, plus 18. When he was on the floor, Milwaukee outscored Toronto by 18 points. Now, this guy was out, Fez, for 2 months?
Yeah, since March 15th.
And now this is going to be his third game in game two?
Yep.
He's already playing pretty well. I think we look at this Milwaukee team, and for most of the nation, they have seen Milwaukee without Brogdon.
Yeah, he was their third leading scorer this year.
So, you know, first round of the playoffs, nothing from him. Second round, played the last game.
Yep.
So if you weren't following Milwaukee with League Pass and seeing how good he is, I think this is an addition that Brogdon's, how much he adds, is going to surprise some people.
And the other point guards, Hill and Bledsoe for Milwaukee, were terrible last night. They both shot terribly, so it was critical Brogdon was back.
Now, over the 2 months, how did they play, would you say?
They've been playing well.
Okay. So, but it goes to show you, you don't need depth if everyone's playing well, but sometimes it's nice to have, Brogdon's playing bad. We'll put the guy in that did okay when he was gone. And I think we're going to be talking about this with Golden State. One of the things Kerr's doing that's just so amazing, I think, is giving everyone on the bench in game one some time just to see who's hot, who's feeling good, whose biorhythms in a weird way. And we'll talk about that, but I actually think it's a brilliant move and a huge advantage for Golden State. Second half of the show will be a big emphasis in that second half hour on that Golden State game tonight. But Brad, I gave you a commission, and this is Brad Powers. He has all the college knowledge. He's a hell of a free throw shooter. I mean, we'll get into that as time passes. A champion in fifth grade. Yes, a former champion.
Yeah, former.
Like Ric Flair. Yeah. Now, I said, I want you thinking out of the box. We've got producer Daryl, new to the show, a very hot commodity out of Atlanta. We've got the rest of the team. I said, Brad, I want you thinking out of the box. You came up with something so intriguing off of Brook Lopez and his really good night with points.
Yeah, so Brook Lopez last night, kind of the unsung hero, 29 points, a playoff career high for him. And it got me thinking, I was like, wow, just a couple years ago, Brook Lopez was on the Lakers. And earlier this postseason, Lou Williams, the Clippers guard, had a really good series against Golden State. Well, Lou Williams was on the Lakers just a couple years ago. So then I started looking at stats for averages for this year. These are former Lakers that were on the Lakers' actual roster in the last couple years. Lou Williams, he averaged 20 points per game this season. He was a former Laker. D'Angelo Russell, who's now at Brooklyn, 21 points per game he averaged this season. Jordan Clarkson, he's a throwaway player. He's not nothing. Well, for the Cavs this year, Jordan Clarkson averaged 17 points per game, former Laker. Julius Randle traded to the Pelicans. Randle averaged 21 points per game. You think Lakers fans wouldn't mind having a couple of these guys back?
You know what's interesting? If you had LeBron
to that
and that team, read the players one more time.
Brook Lopez, Lou Williams, D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, and Julius Randle.
And LeBron.
And LeBron and, you know, a couple.
Forget anyone else. Let's just say that'd be a pretty good team.
That's a playoff team right there.
Listen, here's what in a way, you're being critical of Magic.
Yep.
I'm Magic Johnson. You know how many finals I've been in?
He doesn't seem bothered.
Guys, it's been a couple of days since Zion Williamson, and the talk about Zion Williamson going to the New Orleans Pelicans has continued on. As his stepfather says, that they are now excited to go to New Orleans. There's been some discussion about potentially going back to Duke or forcing a trade out of New Orleans if they take him number one overall. So, RJ, now that we know that they are welcome to the idea of playing for the Pelicans, what's the Vegas perspective on Zion Williamson?
So they say, first of all. Right. So they say, right? So we'll see. The estimate is Zion's going to have a $100 million shoe deal, okay? If he goes back to Duke, he couldn't do that. Any other decision he made other than Duke, he'd get that deal. So it strikes me that financially it's not an issue. Now, by the way, a lot of talk about, sit out a year, get redrafted. The Pelicans would hold his rights in perpetuity. So there'd be no situation that the Pelicans would lose his rights. Now, obviously, the Pelicans could trade his rights if they felt like they weren't going to get any asset or any value from him in a given year. Now, you might think, he'd be a villain, you know, a heel turn. Well, wait a minute. Eli Manning, probably loved by his fan base. You know, GMs get fired. You sit Eli for a game, GMs get fired over it, right? And think back, it was a situation where he was drafted by the San Diego Chargers. He said, I won't play for the Chargers. I don't give a care. I'm not playing. Ended up getting traded, won two Super Bowls. Go back in time, Fez is the one who was in his early 30s at this point when John Elway was drafted. A lot of people forget this. I forgot the team. It was the Baltimore. I mean, again, I'm very young.
Baltimore Colts.
Baltimore Colts drafted him. And then he said, no, thank you.
Going to play baseball.
You know, the wire hadn't come out yet. Baltimore wasn't as cool. So he said, no, thank you. And the fact of the matter,
game doesn't change.
Game the same, just got more fits.
Yeah, it wasn't like that. He wanted out of there, and the trade happened. Now, if you think back to the Chargers, it worked out okay. They got Phillip Rivers in that. But boy, for the Baltimore team, now think about this. It was John Elway, who at the time was ranked as one of the greatest college quarterbacks ever. Because remember when Andrew Luck came out, it was like, highest rated quarterback since John Elway coming out of college.
Yep.
So this guy wasn't just the number one pick. He would have been the number one pick over a 20-year period. What did the Baltimore team get back?
They got back a first-round draft pick, an offensive lineman, Chris Hinton.
Don't remember him.
A backup quarterback, Mark Herrmann.
I remember the name.
Not Mark Harmon, Mark Herrmann.
Okay, okay.
And a first-round draft pick.
And by the way, where did that pick become?
The first-round pick?
Yeah.
Defensive back Leonard Coleman from Vanderbilt.
He's not in the Hall of Fame, is he?
No, he's not.
So usually when you're forced to make these trades, it doesn't work out too well. Last thing, we were talking about actually two things here. Michael Lee, who's a fellow on Twitter, and his Twitter handle is Mr. Michael Lee. He goes, listen, the fans are upset that didn't win the NBA lottery, but look at game one of the Western Conference Finals. The five best players on the court, now this is with KD sidelined, were all taken number five or later in the draft. Top five players on the court. In the Eastern Conference, the best five players were all taken after number 12.
Wow.
So, yeah, sometimes those guys come along that are almost sure things, like a LeBron, but you look at the four teams here left, and obviously KD being out kind of skews that a little bit. But even if he's in, it'd be 9 out of 10 players, not one of these top picks. And oh, by the way, though, last thing on the draft is the idea that the Lakers at four, it's almost as good as three. It's better than five. Our producer, Daryl, had 8 mock drafts, 8 separate ones, all from good sources, Bleacher Report, Ringer, etc. All 8 had the same top 3 guys. All right? So, RJ Barrett and
Zion Williamson.
Zion and
Ja Morant.
One of them flipped the order 2 and 3, but it's like, and then at 4, there's like 6 different people.
Yeah.
So, in a weird way, I think Colin made this point, and it was a very valid one that he made. 4 sounds mighty good, but if you got 6, 7, 8 people that are a viable pick there, is it all that much better than the 9th pick, let's say? Because it's going to be one of those that you're going to get. Now, you might like your guy, but I think the Lakers, if you look at the draft, it seems top heavy with the top 3. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. Last thing, one of our assistant producers, Sleepy J, he goes by in the pregame forums. He said something that blew my mind. And at first, I kind of scoffed. And then I thought, this is pretty interesting. So open question here, guys. Imagine if the Pelicans traded traded AD, Anthony Davis, and they traded Zion. Now, Bill Simmons does a, trade value column. And it's not just who are the 5 best players or 20 best. It's based on the contract, based on their youth, based on whatever factors other than just how good you are. Where's Zion on that list? I mean, is Zion the 6th, 7th most tradable asset?
I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Jonas?
Yeah, that's about right.
And where do you put Anthony Davis?
Top 3.
So imagine this. You've got a situation where you have 2 of the 7 most tradable assets. Imagine they got, 2 or 3 young players for each of the trades. So now they got 4 to 6, and they get 3 or 4 first round picks for each. They'd have 5 good young players and 6 or 7 number one picks coming up in the next couple of years. In 4 years, what would be the expectation of that Pelicans team 4 years from now?
Yeah, but
should be pretty good. Sounds like the process.
The goal is to land the number one pick and to land a generational player, and they've just done that.
Except we just saw the stat that said that's not all that important. Giannis wasn't the number one pick.
I also think that in New Orleans, you've got to hit in the draft more so than any other place because you can't land
people
free
don't
agents.
Want to stay.
Yeah, it's not a free agent destination. And if you get a guy like Zion that you probably couldn't get in free agency, you got to take advantage of that.
No, I hear you. I hear you. But the question is, will, when you say take advantage, if they trade AD now, what's the odds that the Pelicans are able to even make a conference final during the first contract of Zion? If I asked you even money, will the Pelicans make a conference final during Zion's first four-year contract? Am I correct? It's a four-year, the first one?
Yep.
Okay. Would you take it, yes, at even money?
No, God, no.
All right. So in a weird way, you're saying we can't weigh Zion, except it seems like what scenario would happen they wouldn't, quote-unquote, weigh Zion?
Yeah, that's why what they get back in return for Davis is really going to be the key in all this.
And Fed said it yesterday. I think they got to try to weight it towards existing players and not future draft choices.
I would agree.
Okay, in just 1 minute, the Jets. That's all I'm going to say. The Jets, question mark.
That's coming up next, but for all the latest from around the world of sports, it's Dan Beyer. Thanks, Dan. Straight out of Vegas here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up 10 minutes from now here on FSR, we will take a look ahead at Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan. He's the voice of Vegas, RJ Bell.
So this Jets situation, Jonas, you're a critical dude in general. Would you agree with that?
That's fair.
I wouldn't say hypercritical. I mean, that's what some exes have said, I noticed,
right,
on Facebook.
Of course.
I mean, I did some research before we took you on the team.
It's fair. It's all out there.
But here's the question. And listen, Brad, we're not judging.
Women, we can lay.
What do you think of this Jets situation? It seems like in general, people are like, OMG, you don't think it's so bad.
I don't think it's that big of a deal, and I don't think it's that big of a shock either. There's been stuff out there that Mike Maccagnan, the now former GM, and Adam Gase weren't really seeing eye to eye, and I think people are taking this stance that, well, you had him hire the head coach, and you had him do the draft and free agency. Why would you fire him now? To me, this just tells me that Mike Maccagnan didn't really have the power this offseason that a lot of people think, because you don't make this move unless you had a feeling that it was a real possibility. And I think the fact that Gase is still there and now he's serving as the interim general manager means that he was more of an ownership hire than he was a hire of Mike Maccagnan.
Gase?
Yes.
Okay, so here's the question. If you know the guy is going to be gone months ago, and due to that fact, you don't give him any real power, why not get rid of him then and increase the chance you're going to find somebody who, I mean, I haven't followed every GM hire, but it seems like that whatever the marketplace was, whoever was available 3 months ago is more people than it's available now.
Yeah, and I would...
So what was under your theory, what was gained by waiting?
I think that they were so set on Adam Gase
being the guy. He doesn't seem to have a good answer.
No. This is really what I think. I would have done it your way. I would have done a package deal. If I'm hiring a head coach and I'm bringing in a GM, I'm doing it at the same time. That's how I would have done it. That's how most teams would have done it. But as you said, Jets, it's the Jets. And I think that they looked at Adam Gase as a guy they couldn't let go, and they needed to grab him while he was available. That's why
Hired. Because he was just fired. I mean, you better snap that guy up right away.
And that's the thing. Everybody speaks so highly of him, they think so much of him, that they saw, okay, let's grab our coach and let's see if this can work with Maccagnan. And once they sniffed that it wasn't going to work, they said, cut ties now instead of waiting till later on.
Now listen, I don't know if somehow you're unaware of Colin's position on this, because you guys with your multiple year feud,
right?
It pretty much was what Colin said today. You're both wrong. This is absurd. I mean, the idea that waiting till now in any way, just the fact you paid the guy all this time. I mean, like, what is being gained by it? And if he did actually have power and you said, well, now that we've seen what he did here, we now think he's not good enough to be the GM. Okay, that's fine. But boy, that means then a mistake was made and that he made some decisions they didn't like. But I want to quickly talk about, in literally 30 seconds, talk about Gase. Colin was saying, well, Belichick was fired, blah, blah, blah was fired. Wait a minute. Belichick got fired by the Browns, and it was like 6 years or 5 years. He went back to Parcells, learned a few things, sat and contemplated what went wrong, and he finally got the Patriots job 5 years later, right? So to me, if you say, tell me a coach that got fired young, took some time or had some time as an assistant, and then came back and did it right. I think there's going to be more than a few of those. Belichick's on the list. You tell me a coach that had a lot of success, but still got fired. Shanahan, you know, we've seen those. Then come and have success at the second place. Yes, they've proven their success. So there's two criteria I think a fired coach can be viable. Number one is if they take enough time off between jobs to learn what they didn't know before. Or number two, they already proved that they are winners and then it was just be a winner at another spot. But a guy that has never proven he's a winner, Gase, that had no time off in between jobs, first of all, those guys rarely ever get hired. You don't see it. I can't think of one that became really good. Doesn't mean Gase isn't going to be good. But boy, oh boy, the idea that he's a guy that now is what? The second coach in football with Belichick to be the GM too? So you're taking a guy who just got fired and giving him two jobs. But somehow Jonas likes it.
He's always been a guy that has potential. That's how they look at him. That's how they look at him.
That's what my fifth grade English teacher said. When we come back, it's a whole segment, Golden State, Portland.
That's coming up next. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox, and it's the pregame show you've always wanted right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
I'm RJ Bell. We're Straight Out of Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of you, the fan. We've got game two of the Western Conference Finals coming up 9 Eastern time from the Bay Area. And the Golden State Warriors are right now a 7-point favorite on pregame.com hosting the Trailblazers.
So first, real quick, Jonas, is John running the board today?
He is.
Okay. Tell John, if he's listening, we don't step on Cindy. He was bringing it down, trying to goad me into coming in. No. We let Cindy have her say.
Yeah.
And then we come in.
Oh, he just walked out. Hey, John, don't step on Cindy. Right. He was already at the liquor store. Sorry about that.
All right, Fez. This is an interesting game. Now, I don't want to overhype, but I've got my caloric intake game of the... Or not, whoa. My caloric intake prop bet of the NBA playoffs. Now, I had my NBA underdog cash plus 280.
Money line.
I had two other props that I said these are game of the year types. Let me see. 2-0. So we're perfect on special bets. I've got another one. First, though, let's talk about the game. Who do you like?
So I lean to Portland here, and the reason being is just how often do we see this? Motivation for Golden State. When they get a big win, double-digit win, they relax and they are still playing hard, but they don't play quite as hard. And because of that, the spot screams Portland here. Now, RJ, this line was 8. It's down to 7. That's why it's just a lean on Portland.
Okay, so game one was 7.5?
Yes.
So this is the zigzag. We always talk about it, right? Is you think, oh, Golden State showed their dominance. Line should go up. But the theory is Portland is more motivated. Maybe Golden State's a little complacent. Obviously, historically, Golden State's been complacent in some spots. Now, I will say this. You're betting against the trend. We talked about it at length. We'll repeat it as long as it needs to be repeated. In 3 years with Durant, Golden State, when he's been out, Curry, when he's in, this Golden State team is 31-4. That's right. 35 games, 31 wins, 4 losses. Against the spread, 21-11, 3 pushes. Now, the only concern is going to be, oh, are they too thin? Because 6 becomes 5, 7 becomes 6. But boy, oh boy, we saw it. Is the bench got empty pretty much, and everyone looked pretty good. And I think what Kerr's going to do, whoever makes their first shot, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. They start feeling good. Here's my canter under. Now, what's his over-under for points?
11.5 points. Enos Kanter.
This is my caloric intake game of the year. Kanter under 11.5 points. Why? Due to Ramadan, he is not allowed to eat from sun up to sundown. This game is starting where it's dark back east, But in Golden State, he won't be able to take in any water or any food until mid-fourth quarter is the estimate. And the idea that that's not going to affect him is absurd. Caloric intake prop of the year under Cantor, 11.5 points.
The Odd Couple is next here on Fox Sports Radio. We are straight out of Vegas. We'll be back tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 o'clock Pacific, right here on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Straight out of Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.